Hey, good morning, everybody. Super excited to be here. I have to say that Saturdays have turned into one of my favorite days. You know, this is for those that are new. This is open Q&A to, you know, achieving that integrated life when it comes to marriage, business, family, kids. Austin did something this week that really changed him. And yeah, we'll talk about that as well. And then I wanted to talk about psychological safety right now. And actually in our business, I have a great coach and we had a coaching call and, you know, I was sharing my win, and my win was something that most would not think is a win, but it was some self-reflection in having to remove myself from a meeting or remove one of our leadership from a meeting. And I was hurting the relationship because of how I communicate. And yeah, I was causing our environment to be, I was hurting our psychological safety within our company, and I didn't even know it. And I'll get into it with you guys, and I can bet you guys are all doing this. And it really hurts our employees' psychological safety. And right now is especially like so many changes going on. It's really important to pay attention to this and observe it. And are you doing it?
Yeah. And it's also super, super important because
there's a fly.
I know. I'm like, God.
We live in Florida. There's always bugs.
But from a spouse or another partner who's working in the business as well, this was massive because I hit this roadblock as well. And it honestly was fracturing our relationship for a little while.
Yes.
So we'll clue into that later.
Yeah. Psychological safety is huge, especially for someone who's not an entrepreneur and you're married to that person. And we can get into what that means. But like my coach was like, this is a big moment, Libby. Like you have just reached next level leadership, like next level mastery. And I was like, whoa, I did. So we'll get into that. And it's something that I've been working on for a long time. It's self-mastery, right? It's how do you understand yourself so that others can, so we have Jen Rogers on here and Jeremy, I thought you were trying to slap Chris around
again.
That was last night, Jeremy. It was last night.
Took the words right out.
So what did Austin do in our, let's talk about what Austin did. So Austin, he's asleep. So he doesn't follow his mom.
I was actually trying to find it.
So Austin, my son has long hair. We all have long hair. Yaya has long hair. And Austin is 16 years old. And he cut his hair this week. He cut it all off, all of it. And it's so funny because of what happened to him. I don't think he realized. I'm trying to find the picture of his hair so I can show it. I don't think he realized what was going to happen to him. And it's one of those things. Oh, it's right here. It's right here. I'll show it to the camera. He cut this much of his hair off. He's going to donate it, I think. He's going to donate it or sell it. I don't know. He cut that much of his hair off. And we're native, wear our hair. I got my Choctaw hat on. But he cut his hair off and he's extremely uncomfortable right now because I think he didn't realize that was so tied to his identity. And it was kind of part of who he was. And at 16, now he won't take the beanie off his head. And I said, are you going to wear that beanie forever? And he goes, until my hair grows back. Poor Austin, though. It was a big move for him at 16 to cut, you know, to change his look that dramatically. Mm-hmm. And to cut all his hair off.
All through basketball, really. Mm-hmm. Well, through middle and high school. It was the kid with the man bun.
He had cornrows.
Yeah.
Or with cornrows, not dreads.
Yeah.
But it really tied to him who he was. And I just thought it was interesting. We don't think about those things and some of the things that we do. It's so ingrained in who we are and your identity when you do something like that. And then he also recently went back to homeschool.
Mm-hmm.
And he works for one of the software companies now.
Yeah.
We made him have a job. Mm-hmm. Because basketball season's over. He's actually doing really, really well.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm really impressed with, you know, usually you hear horror stories of family working in the company where like you bring on a kid. And this is a part of the 1LD
yes
lifestyle program. But having the next generation working in there, I am thoroughly impressed with the execution that Austin has, with what we have him doing, because it's like he follows directions to the T. He's consistent. He's able to think for himself. Mm-hmm. And so I say this because a lot of parents might think, I have to baby, I have to shelter, I have to hover over them to do the job right. And I guess this kind of bleeds back into leadership as well. But I found it that Austin has been fantastic in terms of, if you think about apples for apples, every other employee that we have or whatever, in any other company, is to be able to ask somebody to go and do this and execute this consistently. You have some reservations. You'd have the hesitation to say, well, shoot, now I got to go back and fix it or whatever.
I mean, how many people are scared to hire someone who's 20 or 25? Because they're like, oh my God, they're not reliable or they're, you know, immature. But I would argue that, you know, I put the quote up the other day. It's that a bad system will beat a good person any day. It doesn't matter how old you are. If you're giving them the tactics and the process to execute, like, effortlessly and flawlessly, anyone can do it.
Yeah.
Anyone can do it.
Yeah. So it's been great. He's been, again, like clockwork. We have him working Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
Because now he has what opened up 3 hours a day.
No, but I asked him if he would do an interview with me because I wanted to interview him for all the business owners out there who have kids going to public school. I wanted to interview him. And so he's kind of like, meh, because of how much time he got back to it in his life. So Austin was homeschooled. He went to public school for half of 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, and 10th. And he's come out for his 11th grade year. And he was like, and I've been trying to get him to come out of school. I'm like, you should drop out. He's like, Mom, shut up. So I'm like, so he's, you know, back to homeschool. And he's like, I said, so how's it feel? He goes, oh my God, I have so much more time left. He's like, what were we doing? Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh, I'm done. 2 hours of school a day. He's done. He's done everything. And so like, he doesn't even do anything on Friday because he's already caught up. So we said, okay, you're going to have to work. And so we didn't ask him to have a job when I was a child. I had to work.
Yeah.
There was no question. And I think that's one of the things that helped me get through life without mm-hmm. like, oh, why this happened to me. It's one of the things that helped me get through life. So I told him, and he has to work. No questions asked. You have to clock in at a certain time and you can only clock out when you're, and if you are late. He had a dentist appointment yesterday and he had to on Slack report that he was going to be late because he had an emergency dentist appointment.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the processes we put up so that there's clarity in like, even employees, family, I don't care if you're related to me, act like a professional, even if you're sitting next to me in the same room.
And again, I'm going to say this for all of the parents out there that are also business owners that are either considering or have somebody that they know working with them. And it is, if you do not prime your kid, your whatever, and how to work with you in your company and what the expectations are, if you have not set those expectations, it will fall apart and it will be a train wreck. Mm-hmm. So I want to say this.
I'm also paying him below minimum wage, guys. Don't tell anybody. I'm not paying him $15 an hour yet. He needs to learn how to work. And when he proves to me he can work well, he can show up, I'll pay him that. Don't tell nobody. Report me to the child labor board. No, because this is his first like job and this is a trial. And if it works well and the project we gave him to do, he can execute efficiently, right? I'm not, then I will pay him what he deserves to make.
Yeah.
But he has to prove it to us first.
Yeah. But again, the whole concept of priming, I don't want to dismiss this as just some simple, boring psychological thing.
So I'm getting a good deal.
But priming for your kids, this is like, it would have fallen apart horribly if we did not do this beforehand. And it was priming him on the idea of what we do, priming him on the culture that we've built, priming him on the expectations and the understanding of what the position entails, going into detail as to why we're doing things, not just what to do, because that would have just fallen apart, but the why behind it, because he's got a very unique position.
I will say he's a slightly immature 16-year-old. No disrespect to him, but he's not, he is not, Mom, if you're listening to me, I apologize, but he's not doing what I was doing when I was 16.
So I want to say that life experiences.
So he's 16 and he's very, introvert. He's very sports oriented. He's always played travel competitive basketball. But back to Chris priming, we primed him so much that we actually told him where he had to sit when he worked. And also that he had to use hotkeys, Chris told him, and he had to use a mouse.
It like, is a requirement of the job.
We're not, and that's why I said I'm not paying him $15 an hour to start, because he needs to build up efficiency and experience to earn that. When I was a kid, I think I made $8 a week. And yes, I talked to the accountant. Yes, like we have it all doing it legally through payroll, but not the first week because we were testing it. And again, if it's under 600, you can 1099 him and he doesn't have to pay taxes. But we only did it a week trialing, and then he's moved into being actually on payroll.
Yeah. But that being said is, again, we do not break the process on how we communicate to an employee, not a family member, because that's like you're living in the same house. And so it can get, you're going to get blurred lines when you, especially if you have a split remote environment.
So we're all remote and we're all homeschooled now.
So like, think about
all the kids, me, Chris, Austin, Yaya.
So we have this natural family water cooler talk that happens. And most people dismiss it as it's because we're here and, you know, he's my son, so I can talk to him however I want. You know, that's the mindset that goes into, I think, a lot of people by default.
Yeah.
But give him the same respect as we do every single employee. Give him the same expectations as every single employee. I'll give you an example is that he asked me, or he private messaged me through, because we have him in the Slack environment.
With our company. Employee.
And so he private messaged me a question on what should I do if, or how should I blah, blah, blah. And I said, I'm going to pass this back through to the channel that we have designated for his work, because I want to make sure that everybody stays in sync. Just because this is a part of the culture that we've built and a reason why it works so well. But I told him, I'm like, and I say this to everybody, is that I'm going to go ahead and forward the message back in to the chat and I'll answer it there.
Yeah, we practice total transparency with all the companies. We don't have locked chats. All the chats are open. The only one that's locked or not open is our HR chat in case there's sensitive information. We don't want to share that with other employees if an employee has an issue. And we discourage private messaging, at all costs. Now you can like, hey, what'd you do this weekend? No problem. Like, but we are very transparent, and every single one of our employees, whether they're cleaning technicians, a developer for the software, the CTO to the CS to the sales, has said, like, I've never worked anywhere where this total transparency is really interesting. And so this is a great segue into
psychological safety. Because this will not work if you do not have psychological safety.
Yeah.
And again, that's the same respect that we give Austin with psychological safety. That's what we built. And that's the reason why it's working so well.
Yes. So let's move into we're super proud of Austin. I was so sad he cut his hair. but I get it. He was looking for a change, and maybe one day he'll show it to us. I haven't been able to take a picture of him yet because he won't take off the beanie or show me his face.
He had an early life crisis.
Yeah. So psychological safety. And so having a company that's practices total transparency can be scary, but it's also really, really like rewarding and freeing. Like there's nothing that any one of my employees, and especially if you want to one day be a coach, or you want multiple ventures, or you want to be an influencer, not like social media influencer, but like a mentor in your industry, whether you're in power washing, windows, or cleaning, you want to be an
influence for your industry.
Yeah, influence to your industry. And so that means you're public. You share a lot on your social media. Maybe your social media is open. Like mine's completely open. My employees are most of the time they're on this watching it. And one of the things, this is freeing because you're not hiding anything. Who cares if I'm working from the lawn chair in Margaritaville? Who cares? Because I was working last night till midnight. I'm not shy or scared to hide that. It is so freeing to have total transparency in your companies, in your business, in your social media. And this is why it never feels exhausting, ever.
Yes. And I clued into it. And it's what we played into last week, which was intention, alignment, pure execution. But yeah, it was all about alignment. It was about the pure intent, execution, all of that wraps into one. And a piece of that makes it happen is transparency. But Jen Rogers asked, how much transparency and what does that mean for financials?
Yeah, I share my I share all the financials. Everyone in my office has access to all the financials. I mean, this is up to everybody. You have to slowly move into this. But they have access to everything. And what the cleaning technicians have access to, Jen, is expenses. So typically we have it written on a board, or like you see these sticky notes behind me. So typically we have like expenses, our COGS were $54,000 this month, or like marketing was $15,000. We have those up and the technicians can see it. And the profit was this percentage. Why? Because I've always practiced that we have to be profitable. Right? What if we get hit by another hurricane? What if COVID hits us again? Like, what if we want to give better benefits? We have to be very profitable. It's not so that Libby can drive a nice car. I actually probably drive the worst car than any one of my cleaners. So it's not so that I can, you know, have a private island, because, well, what cleaning isn't going to get us that. So it's really up to you. And as far as the software goes, our leadership has access to Stripe, I don't know if they have access to QuickBooks. They have access to Stripe and they see all of the budget reports. So it's grouped budgets. Again, I will actually share my budgeting system in 1LD. Mm-hmm. But because they operate within a budget. So like they have the budget. Here's what we spent in November. And your goal is to get it within budget for December. And so they see that. And we're very transparent in pay. Very. And so much so that my COO one time was like, oh, I don't want them to see how much I'm making because the bookkeeper makes less than me. I'm like, I don't care. You can't live that way.
Yeah.
Because then you're going to forget. It's like narcissism. You're going to lie so much. You don't even know what you lied about. And then you're going to forget about what you said or how much you said or what you said. And it drives you to insanity.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Yeah. No, a lot of things to that before I forget. But one of them is the psychological part of transparency and the financials is, if you gotta approach it like to the fullest transparency that you can, like to where it's natural for you. Because if you don't, and you have this feeling or this sense of insecurity or shame or guilt that's built up with you, and actually I have something it's more in terms of like energy, but if you have this type of insecurity or guilt or shame about it yourself in how you approach it, or how you present it or deliver it, you're going to give that feeling to other people about there's something off here. Is mm-hmm. that even if nothing's off,
it's psychological safety. You're hurting that safety, psychological safety in your company. And if you're remote or you have any remote employees, this is super, super important because, and I'm sorry, Chris, I'll let you get back to it. Mm-hmm. And the reason what he's explaining is super important. It's because if you're in an office, the office itself, the physical location helps build psychological safety. Oh, I drive to the office every day. I have my computer. I park here. It builds that psychological safety. But when we're remote, it's actually harder to build this. But here's the one thing that I want to mention, Jen, is that when we first started our companies, all of us out there, no matter what industry you're in, it was just us, right? And it was just us. And, you know, it's going in our own bank account. And maybe we hire one or two employees. And then we grow and we grow and we grow. But our relationship with money didn't grow. And, oh, you were going into energy. And how do you manage that energy? There's two forms of energy. So our relationship with money didn't evolve. But our business did. One of the best, like, I went to again, coaching group I'm in, they brought in someone to teach us how do we nail our relationship with money and what influences that relationship. But the thing I want to say here, Jen, is that it's okay to share these numbers because our companies are so much bigger than us. They're now beyond us. It doesn't go in my bank account no more. I don't even have a debit card. I couldn't even spend the money if I wanted to because they took the card away from me. and so it creates such a huge like level of accountability now within the company, and each department has a budget that they're trying to run in and achieve. And if they can get within budget or below budget, that's when they can give bonuses and incentives or like rewards. But if it's always this secret, how can we hold anyone accountable, especially if you have management? Then they're not true managers.
And there's no buy-in.
No, and there's no buy-in. When someone wants a raise in their department, great. What's your budget? How's the budget coming in? Are you under budget or are you over budget?
And so every single one of those numbers on that balance sheet have a why behind it. And if you haven't understood and explained it so that they can understand it, then I think that's, again, where there's a breakpoint. Mm-hmm. So it's understanding the why behind every number that's on that sheet is also helpful. Not that you have to go explain everything because you feel like you have to, but again, just it being there. And the best way that I can explain in terms of transparency and financials, think about publicly traded companies. They have things out there for people to see because they have investors. They have people who are, again, have a vested interest, stakeholders in that company. So they want to understand the health of it. They want to understand what's behind it. And so I think that that's the closest that we can get to understanding what it looks like in terms of transparency and financials is think about it. You yourself as a publicly traded company, and the goal here is to make sure that you are sharing insights on how the company is doing with people who have a stake in the company.
Yeah, which are your employees.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I always love sharing the financials and we just write them on the wall. We don't tell nobody that they're there. They're just there. And if they want to look at them, great. And I'm like, if any cleaner wants to quit and go open their own company, great. Look, I spent $15,000 on marketing. You got that to float?
Good luck.
No, you don't. Cause we think we make it look easy because we're hiding so much stuff sometimes. Like being transparent and saying, oh my God, like this is a real company, $55,000 for payroll. Holy macaroni.
Meanwhile, we're jumping on a Zoom at 5 o'clock at night, sweaty, just on the couch, together, just really scrapping it. But, showing that we're people, we're working too. It's yep. Not like we're polished and.
So I want to, I haven't even gotten into the psychological safety side, but this all has to do with psychological safety. So we do a great job at WooRecruit. Like I'm not going to lie. It's really good. And Organize It actually struggled for a while. And I said, how do I have this totally remote company, WooRecruit, total remote? Like we don't even, there is no office. Slack is our office. But over here, Organize's culture was hurting because we were trying to run it like a non-remote company when in reality, our technicians are all remote. They don't come to the office every day. They don't have the psychological safety because they don't go to a place every day to sit at a desk and work. They're remote. They work from home because they leave from their home and they go to the job, the next job, and go home. So I think that's one of the things that hurts our turnover because we have to build psychological safety. And one of the things that I realized with Organize It is that to me, it's really hard to have a company that is both hybrid, that is both in person and remote, because someone always feels left out and it's hard to manage. So with Organize It, even though we have an office, we went total remote. We manage it like a total remote company, and that has helped our culture so much. It's amazing how it's changed. Yes, we still have an office. Yes, they go there once a week to pick up supplies. But what we did was we said, you know what? These technicians are remote. Let's start treating them like that so that we can build a strong culture virtually, remotely.
Yeah.
And get them engaging in the chat more. And because with our model, they don't come to the office every day. And no one was in the office, but we treated it like a, you know, like a real workspace. So we went total remote. And the way we treat it, the way we organize things, manage communication, held meetings, expectations, and it has really helped our culture. And we have our technicians engaging more than they were prior when we were always sitting in the office. The office was always unlocked. There was always people in it, but they never came.
Yeah. So I want to dive in a little bit deeper with that. Is the reason why is because with an actual remote, like the old school way is you come in and the culture is built because of that. Being remote, you lose more than half of your senses. And, you know, as a human, as you know, we are built to use all five of our senses. Some people say six, but you lose the smell of coming into the office. You lose the sound of what's around you in that realness of hearing somebody's voice, the inflection of their voice. You lose that. You lose the sight of looking around, and that's what spatial recognition of knowing that the same way that you're reading a book as opposed to hearing or having it on a screen is that the reason why some people love paper and love physical books is because your brain works through spatial recognition, meaning that it feels more comfortable and understands where things are spatially. Like if you flip a page, you know that there's words on this page, and that's just so happens to have what you're looking for. If you're scrolling on a computer, you don't have that same ability. So you don't retain as much and you don't feel connected to it. So you lose that spatial recognition. You lose that sound, that feeling, and smell. So it's having to replace that.
Yeah.
Virtually.
And I think that this might be one of the reasons why we have such high turnover in the cleaning industry, because we're treating our cleaners like in-person employees, when in reality, if you're practicing the solo model, they are virtual. They work from home, right? Even though they don't do the work in their home, they work from home. And we have not shifted that psychological safety. Say they don't have that like, oh, I'm at the office, because they only come once a week, and that does not give enough psychological safety for them to feel comfortable where they're working without kind of giving that sense of like instability or breeding fear. And so I just think it's something to really think about, especially if you have like a gap or issue with culture, or if you see the culture fading because your office is in the office all the time, but your technicians are in the field all the time. They are remote.
Mm-hmm.
But we could go back to psychological safety. And I want to share something that I did. And I learned that, you know, I was causing an imbalance. I was causing psychological fear in my company with some people. And, you know, some of you guys had heard me talk about, I had an employee who was kind of being disgruntled, but he was great at his job, but he could, like, he told me that everybody's scared of me. And like, and I didn't know where that was coming from. And so what I had done is I had moved up an employee in the company into the leadership meetings, into the management meetings. And in those management meetings, I am totally transparent. Like, they know profit, they know money, they know revenue, they know problems. And man, I kept asking for feedback. I want feedback. I need you to be open. I need you to be honest. And this person was getting so like upset or frustrated, and he didn't know how to communicate it. And I was like, I told Chris, I said, either me or them have to leave. I'm going to kill this person. Like, I'm going to strangle them. I hope I don't get in trouble, because I don't literally mean that. I was like, I'm like, oh my gosh, we are clashing. We are not simpatico. One of us is going to end up getting fired. Or I was going to fire him. And so I had to step back and say, oh my gosh, I am breeding fear into him. He's not ready to hear this information. I am causing an imbalance in his psychological safety, because I'm sharing like complaints or issues or finance stuff. And in meetings, in leadership meetings, that's what you talk about. It's not all sunshine and rainbows. It's like, better, how can we be better, 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 you know, budgets, profit, improvements. And most of the time, it's not all positive. It's mainly like, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? The next thing. And so I didn't realize that I was breeding this fear into them. And then they were, because they were in management, taking it down to the rest of the team. And I actually brought someone up too soon into leadership or into management. And when in reality, they were not leadership mindset. No disrespect to them, they weren't. And so my question to everybody, and so I had to take a step back and say, I don't want him to get fired. I don't want him to lose his job. He is amazing at his job. He just cannot process like the transparency that we're talking about sometimes. He's taking it maybe personally, or it's making him fear.
And a lot of that is around having a vested interest in that thing.
He's vested interest. Also been with us 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like to bring people up. And so I'm like, oh, let's come in. And so I said to Chris, I'm like, either I have to step out, or like just out of the meeting, or he does. And I'm like, I don't know what to do, because I really do care about him. And I know he cares, but I'm scaring him by my leadership style, but he won't say anything. And so we made the adjustments, and I said, hey, we have to adjust the meetings going forward. Like, I love you, but we can't work together. We don't communicate well. And this is on me too. Like, I need to learn how to communicate better and read the room and not like hurt the psychological safety of our company by sharing information that shouldn't be shared sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's total transparency though, but you also have to know who are you giving this total transparency to? So sometimes if, let's just say in our cleaning companies, do we have real leadership in those meetings, or are they just office staff or office admin that we could be breeding like a sense of psychological fear because we might be oversharing issues, knowing that are they in the right mindset yet?
Right.
Should I be sharing this? Their total transparency is great, but you can't be a loose cannon either. You have to know who can handle the total transparency and how detailed do I give it, right? With my cleaning technicians, we just show them, oh, these were January's expenses. Like they're on the wall because we write them down. Because I did the same thing to Chris and scared the bejesus out of him. And I had to kind of like pull it back and say, oh my gosh, you know what? I can't share that with him because he can't process it right now.
And to give you a little bit of context, it's because I had a vested interest in the department that I was working in at that time. And I just want to give, let's say, the date mornings, the microtherapy, it's time to talk about everything openly. But at the same time, sometimes there's things that I couldn't process because I was too invested in that thing, which just so happened to be that department. And so for me, it was causing a lot of havoc. You can't run and yell, we're going to break.
We're going broke. Oh, No, we're going broke. No. But see, here's the thing though. In the leadership meeting, I need to be able to say that if we are, because yeah. I need accountability. So you got to read the room, and there's levels of transparency about like, hey, I'm not hiding, but they don't need to know this in detail, but they need to know this. And it's really understanding yourself and how you communicate. And so it's funny because we have version 2.0 of Libby and there's version 3.0 of Libby. And I have to pick what version of Libby is needed for this meeting. Let's just say our quarterly meeting with our technicians. They don't need version 3.0. I would scare the bejesus out of them.
Yeah.
So they just get like version 2.0 of how I communicate in transparency. But in leadership, in true leadership, you know, they probably need version 3.0 and I keep version 4.0 to myself. But there's levels of transparency, and all that is like levels of detail, right? Because I do weekly videos to the cleaners. And if we have issues, I say, hey, dude, you guys got to stop calling out because we're losing customers because of you. And I do say that. If we have call out issues or if we have certain things, and my office gives me like, so it's not always sunshines and rainbows. They get the hard things, but it's not always the hard things.
Yeah. And a great, great example of this, and we've messed up in the past with it, is sales. I think that's the most common theme is, let's say, sales, customer service, or let's say scheduling, but it was the salesperson has to be confident. And this is for all sales that's why like salespeople really kind of have this,
it's why I like remote salespeople, remote salespeople, because of what he's going to say.
Salespeople have a kind of a default tendency of a lifespan of 3 months before they start to lose faith in the product or the service. But salespeople need to be so sold on the product themselves that they are breathing it out to whoever they are on the other end with. And so they need to be in a state of being sold themselves in order to sell that to somebody. And what we were doing was we were breaking that connection, that fire, because we were saying things are falling apart. The product is, you know, this or that.
Or, oh my gosh, we've gotten 5 complaints this week. And then that hurts the psychological safety of the salesperson. Consciously, every time they hear a complaint, an issue, an employee issue, a product service issue, we are chipping away at their sales confidence subconsciously.
Yeah. And so really what we found is that if they're too invested in, let's say, the sales, and we're feeding into that, we needed to take a step back or have them take a step back.
The fly's back.
I know. But keeping the salesperson or keeping that person in that honeymoon phase of the department that they're in. That's the best way that I can explain it, is that honeymoon phase, that first 3 months.
Rose-colored glasses, everything's perfect.
We need to keep that up and keep that excitement. We're here at what, almost 13 years mm-hmm. together? Mm-hmm. And we're still in the honeymoon phase.
Yeah, but so we did this with our salespeople. And when I took sales remote, oh my God, it helped so much. Because they weren't hearing side talk, side chatter, stuff over here. Like, it's kind of like they can live in that little bubble. And when there are issues, or even not even issues, but like you're always trying to be better. And so it's kind of like, oh my gosh, like another thing, this and that. If they can just sell and focus on like sell without hearing any of the outside noise, it keeps that psychological safety really, really high, but also that subconscious confidence that they have in selling their product.
It's the goal of trying like to not inject contradiction into whatever they're doing. And so that's really, really where it comes from is for any department, it's the contradiction that you inject into them. So for customer success or service is the other side of that is, you know, I guess what we came into with the leadership is just the stress and frustration of, you know, a budget of other things of what we need to happen.
Sometimes what we do as well, when we share more numbers externally, just say like to the more entry-level staff is the percentage that we spent of revenue on marketing or on COGS or on certain things, a percentage. So you can always start slow and say, oh, I'm just going to share percentage breakdown or budget and start slow. Because the other thing I love doing this with when we have it on the whiteboards is I didn't make 55% of the money, right? Some employees think, oh, well, if the COGS, if my pay is 55%, you're getting 45 and you're taking that home and putting it in your pocket. And it provides this level of clarity, like, oh, wow, she isn't taking the 45%. She's got to pay the office and the marketing and the insurance.
Do you see this number at the bottom where it says profit?
Yeah.
And it's in the negative.
And it's
actually
the smallest one probably, you know, and I don't even take all the profit because it's safety for the business. So it creates this like, wow, she isn't taking the whole other 45 that I'm not making, that there are other things. And you would think that it's common sense or that everyone knows this, but in reality, they don't. They have no clue. They don't. Because if they did, they probably own a business too.
Context matters.
So back to the psychological safety, if you're remote or you have remote employees, this is so much harder to build. You have to build it. And it's so much easier to tear down without knowing because of oversharing with people who are not prepared. Right. So I just said total transparency, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, I overshared and I scared my employees. Well, I learned over time, I've learned this, like there are versions of what I share, versions of myself for different levels of employees to continue to practice that total transparency. But I love this. I love like learning about myself and, hey, I need to take a step back. Maybe I need to slow down because living in total transparency, nothing is exhausting, right? Nothing. There is no burnout, guys. Burnout comes from when motivation fades. Motivation is temporary, right? If you're driven, that comes from passion. It doesn't fade. But sometimes we feel burnt out, right? Because we were operating on motivation. Oh, I went to this conference and I'm motivated. Yay, let's go crush it. And then it goes, but when you have drive, that never fades, right? That never fades. And so, you know, I put a statement on my Facebook page about like, why do people need to stop talking about the hustle?
Well, like, I did it. Hustle's bad because
like the hustle's bad. The hustle isn't bad if it's driven by drive. If you're driven, if you're passionate about this thing, but it is bad if it's purely driven off motivation, because then you go into burnout. Or you don't know when to stop.
And that motivation is typically anchored to a need or a short-lived thing. But drive is usually that desire, that innate desire to do something.
So living in total transparency is amazing because you are never tired at what you do because you've eliminated a lot of the energy mm-hmm. that takes up your space.
Yeah. So, and to that point, energy... Really, if you think about it in terms of the entire universe, energy can only come in two forms, and that's either constructive or destructive. And it can be applied either way. And so how we look at this ourselves is depending on, again, the same form of energy we can use for constructing or destructing something. But there's the middle grounds of energy, which is in between both. And this is the most dangerous part, is that what you have in the middle is energy that doesn't actually go anywhere or do anything. And so what ends up happening is that you have energy that leaks. This comes into the form of anxiety, insecurity, second guessing yourself. And so this is really dangerous, because this ends up giving you that feeling of exhaustion, shame, guilt, whatever it is. But that's how it manifests, because it has to do something, and it's either constructive or destructive. And so
I want you to repeat that, Chris.
Energy can be only one of two things, constructive or destructive.
So how are you using your energy, right? There is no such thing as time management. We can't manage time because we can't slow it down or speed it up. We can only manage the energy we have within a set of time. So if energy can only be one of two things, like Chris said, constructive or destructive, I want you to ask yourself, what are you doing with your energy? Is it constructive or is it destructive?
Yeah. And that middle ground of where it leaks, it could leak on either side. But what ends up happening is that honestly ends up summing up to being destructive energy, because it's never fully utilized. And then it has this kind of blowback. And so this second guessing, this anxiety, this insecurity that, or this doubt that causes this leakage, is really, really bad, because, I think overall it starts to seed into everything that you do, and it starts to build up this negative energy. And it kind of starts to pull in all that energy towards that one side. So if you're always in this state of insecurity or whatever, it's going to make all of that new energy that you have, anything that comes into you, is going to kind of pull in or default to being a negative state, a destructive state for that energy. And so if you're always wondering why you're burnt out, you're tired, you're waking up in the middle of the night, it's because your energy is not going anywhere, or you're using it for destructive purposes without even realizing it. Mm-hmm. And so the way to eliminate that middle ground of that leakage is the magic is in pure it's transparency. It's clarity, because it can only be on either one of sides. It's intentional in terms of how you're using the energy, and doing that, it's like a world of difference.
Poor Chris. When I would tell him things, I don't want to hurt your feelings, Chris, but I would tell him something. I'm like, I just need to say this because I can't keep it inside. Because if I keep it inside, that energy is destructive internally to me. I just need to say it. And it doesn't mean to hurt his feelings. But maybe I don't like something, or could you please stop doing this? Or just and it's very minor, but sometimes we don't say it because we don't want to hurt someone else's feelings, and it's not intentional, but it's like, maybe it's, I don't like it, or it's doesn't serve me, or it's taking up time, and I don't want to go with you to the somewhere. There we go. Rock climbing. Uh-huh. He loves to climb and I hate it. And I would go with him because I didn't want to say anything, because I didn't want to hurt his feelings. And then finally I'm like, this was probably years ago. This has been 3 or 4 years ago. I said, sweetie, I hate rock climbing. I don't want to go. I could do so many other things with my time. I yeah. love you, but me not going, you don't need me to go to show you that I love you more. Yeah. Can I just not go, please? And if I don't say something, then that energy is destructive, because I'm going and now I'm, got an attitude, or I'm pissy.
And it has a kickback.
Yep.
Energy. It has a kickback if you're not utilizing it. And it's this, like you said, this just shut up and don't say anything. This insecurity, this lack of transparency, that kickback is huge. Mm-hmm. 'Cause then it starts to hit you in here. And I think that was the major thing. And I want to explain that there's two different sides to it. Is there's energy on the person saying it or doing it, and there's the energy on the recipient side in terms of how you digest the information and how you respond to it. That's energy. And so for me, it was hearing that message of, I don't want to go with you, or I'm going to do this. Again, that choice boiled down to either applying it in a constructive way or a destructive way, or having this indecision moment where the energy just leaks and it ends up trending towards destructive. And so I had to understand with myself, and this is why I love the courage to be disliked. It's understanding a sense of community. It's not paying any mind to whatever other people are saying. In full transparency is receiving the information, but in pure transparency, being able to receive that information and apply it in a different way, redirect it constructively, as opposed to, got my alarm going off, redirecting it constructively as opposed to destructive in not doing anything with it. That's where I was getting at.
Yeah. I struggled with this for a little bit as well. When I first started, we started with remote people about 3 or 4 years ago. And so Tammy's question was, I hesitate on telling our remote workers our pricing and pay because they are paid significantly less. than the rest of the team. How do I overcome this? Is this a real issue or am I overthinking it? But how exhausting is it to keep that information from them? Like the pricing. Pricing is probably everywhere. It's on the invoices. It's on the CRM. It's in emails. It's in text messages. So you'd have to be keeping them from so much that it is exhausting. Managing of that, it probably takes so much energy that like you're just what do you have left to even actually like do something or execute
with that? And with that mindset or that idea in terms of how is that energy being applied internally?
Yeah, internally. Like, and then you feel bad. Like you wrote this, you feel bad. That's also taking up your energy and it's destructive inside. So, you know, I kind of had the same struggle, but here's my question. Are you really paying them significantly less or do you just think that?
What's your relationship with money?
What's your relationship with money, right? You're seeing it as in dollar signs. Do you know what that pay is equivalent to where they live? It's probably great pay, right? And there's also pros and cons to working remote. You don't have to drive. You don't need to pack a lunch. You don't need to drive an hour to and from work. So there are pros to working remote that people love, even if it is a little bit less money. My sister being one, she loved remote and she went to a job and then she came back to remote because she's like, oh my God, I don't want to have to drive. Like I don't need to pack a lunch or spend money out on the road, like eating out. I get an hour and a half back of my life. I don't have to pay for gas. So my question is, be proud of your pricing because how are they going to be proud of you? They can probably sense that you're hiding something. So be fully transparent. And if they don't like that, this is not the place to work. It's so humorous, right? My COO that I had for a couple of years, he's no longer with us. He was fractional, great guy. He made a lot of money. He made more money than I did. And our bookkeeper was internal and she was paying him out. And she was from the Philippines. And I think she was making like $7 an hour, which is really, it's decent money in the Philippines. And he was so like, oh my gosh, like, is she going to pay me out? How do you feel about that? I said, just do it. Like, just do it. They have to be okay with that and that total transparency to stay. And if you think it's not fair, great. Let me hear about it. I'm not even making as much as he is, but like, let's hear about it. But in fact, ask yourself, am I really paying them that bad a pay? You're not. It's just different. It's different.
Yeah.
And so I got some pushback on something the other day. And so I did the exchange rate on something that I was paying to educate myself. And what I was paying someone in another country was equivalent to $21 to $22 per hour in the United States. But the cost of living was significantly lower. So educate yourself. ChatGPT is a great tool to say, hey, if I'm paying somebody $8 an hour in this country, what is the equivalent to that in the United States? And what is like the norm standard of living for like rent and groceries? It'll give you some really, really great insight because we're looking at it in American dollars and we think to ourselves, oh my gosh, this is horrible. But in reality, we recruit, we try in all of the companies, we try to overpay for the country so that they stay with us. And so, but even overpaying can feel like, oh my gosh, this is not very much money. I can't believe they love it for this much money, but they live in it. The world is so different everywhere. You're comparing it to here, which is here is probably peanuts.
Yeah. And so number one is that pay is only important to a certain degree. After that point, what matters more to that person, once their base needs are met, then what comes into play is how they feel. And the rest is kind of like culture and benefits. And I don't mean this as in like they're expecting benefits, but what else is like that, the sprinkles on top. So for them, pay is only important until their base needs are met. And then from there, and there's been research done about this.
There's a great book called Drive that talks about this in detail. The whole book is about this.
Yeah. But pay is only important up to a certain degree. And then from there, it's all about, I want to say the sense of community. It's how they feel and like in where they're at.
Community, belonging, bigger picture.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I just want you to keep that in mind. And, you know, with the whole idea of being remote or different countries or whatever, the idea that once their base needs are met, what else is next? And if you see or feel or hear, and let's just say, for instance, let's just say theoretically that you have a really locked in culture where you have full transparency, everything is out there and you're communicating you're communicating well to the entire team and they understand and get your goal, is that once their base needs are met, the next thing is what's important to them. And so if you feel, or if you see and hear in that environment that they're still unhappy with the amount of pay that they're getting, it's not because of you, it's not because of your job, it's not because of the pay. Once their base needs are met, what is important to them? This is where it becomes a question of, one, what is their relationship to money? And two, what is their innate feeling on other people? Or is there some insecurity with people in general that they have, and that is now anchoring back to money because that's what they're focused on?
So one really great thing that I want to talk about with Tammy just said, thank you, that she does know one of her remote employees wants to buy a house. So Tammy, we do this and this is super fun. We do virtual vision boards, and we had three people meet the goal to buy a house last year because of the vision board. They love the vision boards, and we do them with our remote, with like everybody. And I just brought up my screen so I could show you the vision boards that that our team has submitted over time of their goals. And we use Canva. It's super fun. We allow everyone to come in and make the vision boards. But one of the things that I wanted to share is I showed them mine, and on mine it says I want $10 million and I want some other like weird things, $10 million. I want $100 million. I want $1 million in the bank. Some like random stuff. And I showed that to them. You know why? They need to know about the vision. And then Vivid Visions, like my Vivid Visions have financials in them. They're on my website. Go to every one of the websites, Woot Recruit, Organize It, Sell, Convert, Clean, all have the Vivid Visions with the revenue and the profit in them publicly for everyone. Why do you do this? Don't we want our employees to stay with us for as long as they can, as long as they're a good fit? And if we do want our employees to stay with us forever, their goals, all of their goals, mine have to be big enough that all of theirs fit inside, right? So they need to know that I want $100 million. Like, because Organize It, Woot Recruit, Sell, Convert, Clean, no matter how many companies you have, all of every one of my employees' goals have to fit inside of mine. Because if they don't, and they don't know what my goals are, I am hurting the psychological safety of all of our companies. I'm not gloating. It's not trying to toot a horn. It's like, oh my gosh, she is not going to stop. We have a job. We're on this ride. We're here for you forever because I have a place in here, because I know that you're just not a cleaning company, or you're not just some recruiting company. You're going to change the world, right? You want to improve the industry. And so that creates so much psychological safety that they won't look for another job. They don't go anywhere. My salesperson in Organize, she's like, I've been here 3 years. I'm like, oh my God, you have?
Yeah.
I'm like, 3 years. My office manager has been with us 4 or 5. We still have some of our original Woot Recruit employees.
And returning,
we have a returning employee. And then in Organize It, my first cleaner I ever hired, she left me during Ian. She came back to work for us and she's like, I love it here. She's like, I'm so happy. But have to fit all of their goals inside of mine or they will leave me. They see no future with me or a company if they don't know what my goals are.
And when you identify your goals, and if you've done this and you realize that certain people's goals don't fit inside of yours, you cannot be upset. You cannot be mad.
I'm scared that I'm going to lose Marilyn because Marilyn's my executive assistant. And she has all these goals. Like she wants to be a singer. She sings. She wants to travel. She's going to Cancun next week for vacation. Like, and she has all these aspirations. And I'm like, oh my God, I better grow because I got to keep Marilyn because Marilyn has like, she wants to do this and that. And I'm like, I don't want to lose her. So I better like step it up, hustle up to the next one. Or she's going to go find someone else to be an executive assistant to that will fit her goals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you cannot be mad. You cannot be upset. You cannot harbor this resentment or negative, destructive energy or leak that energy if you haven't locked in that your goals are bigger than theirs so that they could fit inside.
They got to fit inside. That's why we lose people. That's why people, they come because they need a job. And then we wonder why they left a month, 2 later, 3 months later. And they just like, oh, you're the nicest person. You're the greatest company to work for, but I got to go, like, I got to quit. And you're like, but why? Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where you have to be so confident. Yeah, I want a $100 million business. Am I going to get it? I don't know. I hope so. But I can guarantee you all of our employees are on that ride and they're so excited. Like, do you really think any of my employees care that I'm writing a book? They didn't care at first until they understood why I was writing the book. It goes in line with New York Times bestseller, the mission, the vision behind creating an empire. And we showed them the accountability chart, and I guaranteed them they will always have a job here. And with this chart, we're just moving up and up and up, and there's more opportunities to grow and more opportunities for careers and more opportunity for money. But again, it's total transparency. Like, be proud. Like, if you think you're not clearly thinking big enough, why not? Like, and it has nothing to do with money. Like, when I said 100, maybe you're happy where you're at. That's great. But you will probably go through more people, because most people have like this eagerness or want to be a part of something like bigger or to grow themselves, like buy a house.
And that's a great point.
So you will churn probably through more people.
Your vision isn't money specific or revenue specific. It's purpose specific, purpose driven. Yeah.
So mine's purpose driven. I don't know if the vivid vision for Libby DeLucian is on the Libby DeLucian website, but if it's not, I'll put it on there. But my purpose of all the companies is to create an ecosystem that supports the cleaning industry specifically. But even though we work with other industries, other, you know, like lawn care and landscaping and windows and other things, it's to build an ecosystem that changes the way the world looks at cleaning. Like, that's in all of our visions. But I did have to tie a dollar amount to it because we needed to make it measurable, and to reach the goal of changing the world or creating lasting impact and legacy, we needed money to do that. You need money to, like, I want to launch a course for entrepreneurs, and I want to teach like younger high school women or men, like, how to start a cleaning company. Like, how, like, I have a vision of helping young entrepreneurs really get into entrepreneurism, but I need money for that. So then, yes, the companies have to be profitable, and here's why. Mm-hmm. And yes, like, if we want to impact 100,000 small business owners, then yes, we have to have money, because it takes money. Sadly, everything takes money. I'm not revenue driven. I'm purpose driven, but I need money to actually carry out the purpose.
Yeah. The vehicle.
Yeah. It's the vehicle. Just sharing and transparency. If you guys aren't doing like vision exercises with your staff, I highly recommend it. You could still do it. And we ask all of our employees, all of our remote employees and office employees, to put those vision boards on the screensavers as their screensavers for their computers. And it was so great to do the call this time, and that three people had already reached the goal of getting a home. One got a car, like, just these random things, exercise and fitness. The one thing I saw that was consistent in everyone's vision was health.
Yeah.
Was health. And so that's great insight for me, that I know there's a lacking here, that everyone wants a little bit to get healthier. So last year we did like health challenges. And I told Marilyn, I was like, oh, we probably should do it again this year, because everyone is looking for a healthier 2025.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything else before we wrap up? I thought this was great. Again, if you have great people and you want to keep them, dude, not just their vision has to fit inside of yours. Your entire companies have to fit inside of yours. You're the owner. You're the leader.
Yeah. And if you don't know that, I strongly, strongly encourage you to figure it out now and understand where they're at, so that you know that if you're in line with where they're going. Otherwise, it's just you're delaying the inevitable. And probably creating a little bit of exhaustion for them.
And yourself.
Because the road that they need to go on is not the one that they're on right now.
Or could be, but they don't even know it.
Exactly. And so it's alignment. But I wanna just tell you that this is the way that I've brought in a lot of people into, let's say, Woodward Recruit specifically, is I wanted to understand their goals. And this is from the very, very get-go. And it might be a little bit different, because we're talking about more so mid-level, et cetera, but I wanted to understand where they were going so that I could understand and connect with that. And what I told everybody is that my goal is to you know, is to provide you a great job and to keep you here as long as you need this to satisfy you. And I said, if we can keep you longer than that point, then I've done my job. Mm-hmm. And anything past that point is gravy. It's basically, if I can continue to contribute towards their goal and extend that lifetime with our company, then that's fantastic. That means that I'm able to start to lay down more bricks for where they're trying to go and their vision, their goals.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where if you said, oh my gosh, maybe I'm not thinking big enough right now. One is you need to know what their goals are. You need to know what their aspirations are. You need to know what they're trying to achieve. They all are trying to do something, right? Whether it's get a new car, get my nails done, go back to school, buy a house. You know, they're all trying to achieve something. Very, very few people in life are not trying to achieve something, right? And even if it's superficial, like buying something. And so you get an understanding of like, what are all, and we even do this with the cleaners. We haven't done it since we moved to the new office, but in the old office, we had a dream wall and they put all of their dreams on the wall. And they were very, very, very like, I don't know how to explain it. We overthink it. I was thinking, oh my God, like, what if they were like, I want a raise? Or I'm like, no, they were like, I want to buy my first home. I want to go on my first vacation. Like, I want to go to Disney World. The dream wall was great because it helped me get an idea of, okay, what am I dealing with when it comes to the technicians in the field of what are their common dreams and common goals? And then in the office, we do a little bit more in your quarterlies. It's typically shouldn't be like your review or that kind of stuff. It's more about the person. It's like, hey, how's it going? Is this in line with your career path? Is there anything we can do? How are you feeling? Is there anything like, what do you want to work on? Is there projects, career path alignment, but also doing the vision boards will help you get an idea of what are all their goals? Because just by knowing, then you're more conscious and you can help them achieve it.
Yeah.
Or they can connect with each other. Oh my God, I want a house too. You want a house? Oh, like, let's work on our credit together. They can help each other achieve it through alignment. But then I got all this information. I was like, okay, I need to write my vision. I need to work on this. What's it look like? Because my vision is all about me, but I also need to make sure, am I thinking big enough or am I just staying comfortable? Am I playing it safe because I don't want to let myself down? Am I kind of dumbing it down a little bit, or am I going big or go home, right? 10X is easier than 2X. So there's that. And the first time I wrote my vision, and I'm a big Cameron Harold fan. Like, we read Vivid Vision about 2 years ago and did this. I know it's very hot right now. It's very popular within the CBF community. And I wrote mine about 2.5 years ago. Me and Paul did it together. But one thing I did, and this is okay because there's always an evolution to everything or a version. So the first Vivid Vision I did didn't have financials because I wasn't comfortable yet. And that's fine, but at least I did my vision. It was more about impact and how I want to do and change like certain things. And then there will always be, I always say ideations, but it's not ideations. It's
iterations
of it. It'll evolve and it will mature with your maturity and it'll grow with you. But if you don't do it at all, there's no chance for it to mature. There's no chance for it to evolve because there's nothing from it to evolve from. And so make it based off of where you're at and how comfortable you are. Who cares about the financials? Who cares if it fits in with your current staffs yet? At least you have a version. Then you can, it can evolve as you evolve.
Yeah. I want to give a great piece of advice that I use myself obsessively, but it's the statement of, if there's somewhere you want to be or a vision or a goal that you have, is asking yourself, what needs to be true for this to happen? What needs to be true for this to come to reality?
It's a great statement for your employees too, when they come with something, what needs to be true?
And so in saying it that way, it provides no assumption. It provides no gray middle area. It's literally a black and white. This needs to happen in order for X needs to happen in order for Y to happen. So it's just, it's a massive exercise. And again, I use this in the simplest things.
He uses this with Yaya at 6 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. After you teach her what it means, the concept. Yeah. But what needs to be true for this to happen?
Even though it looks like I move fast, I can move faster. And so you've seen this over the years of me moving faster, but for a long time, man, I self-sabotage. I have this statement and I would always say it to myself and it's like, I'm not ready yet. Like, I'm not ready yet. And finally, we did some self-sabotaging exercises, Leonard, me and Chris, on a couples quarterly that we do. And I had two self-sabotaging tendencies, and one was to overcommit, like to say yes to everybody, like PTA, basketball coach. Yeah, like do that. Oh, can you jump on a call? No problem. Like I overcommit to my own detriment. And then the second one was, it's a form of procrastination, because I would say, oh, I'm not ready yet. And I would say that, it would make myself feel better about not doing something. And so what I did was I asked Chris to please call me out when he hears me say that statement, like the I'm not ready yet. I'm not. And I was like, he'll call me out now. And I'm like, but I'm like, okay, fine. I'm going to do it. Like it's still such an ingrained habit of saying, I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. That he stops me. And now I watch what I say, because I'm like, man, and I know he'll call me out, but God, have I been able to get so much more done? I can move faster. I don't feel so bad. It's not so self-defeating, because procrastination is really self-defeating.
And procrastination is the middle grounds in terms of energy being constructive or destructive, but that middle grounds of energy leaking is where procrastination happens. It's that insecurity that builds up, or that it builds that stress and ends up, you know, having that kickback to destructive energy. And so it's going to burn you out with that energy leakage.
Yeah. Back in my organizing days, procrastination is huge in organizing. You know, a lot of people, they know how to organize their house. Like, it's not rocket science. Just like cleaning, they know how to clean their house. They just don't want to do it. But with organizing, procrastination is big, because it's like, oh, there's that pile of papers on my desk, but I could go do this instead. And, you know, how do we work through that procrastination or the other side of it? And sometimes we're so paralyzed by procrastination that we don't do anything. There are some things to look at when it comes to procrastination. My organizing side is kicking in now. Like, what causes that in you? Typically, and I'm not saying you directly, I'm just saying people in general. Typically, procrastination comes from something that we were taught, or it was a habit, or is taught to us as a kid, right? And so we have to break that habit that we've kind of built on why we're not doing something. So typically, if you grew up with a parent that was a procrastinator, or a big life event, like a death or divorce or loss of career, can cause that paralysis. A life-changing event, a death, like I said, of a loss of a career, or is how you were raised by like a parent that was a big procrastinator. Chris,
yep.
Your dad was huge, and you have struggled to overcome that part. It was ingrained in him as a child.
And with that, I saw through my dad, and I watched this happen in real time, is it created a lot of sickness, a lot of disease, mm-hmm. either mentally or physically. And that's the one thing that people don't realize, is that this energy that ends up turning negative, this destructive energy from leakage and all of that, is that it manifests, and it's going to manifest either psychologically or physically.
Yeah. And so for me, I think to overcome procrastination, or like my best advice, and believe me, it's not like I do everything every time I say I'm going to do it. I procrastinate too. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm going to go over here and work on this because I want to, not because I'm supposed to. But you know, we've gotten better over time, is looking at things, looking at your environment, changing up your environment, changing up where you work. Working from home can be very, like, very boring or very monotonous. Anchoring different habits. So I have three, I'm not outside as much as I used to be, but I have four places I work, and I work better in each place depending on what I'm supposed to be doing. So like I have a desk over here, then I have a space over there. And then when I sit on the couch, I'm doing more like idea stuff. Or if I go outside, I'm doing like more I do my admin stuff at the bar. So looking at anchors to say, okay, when I sit here, I'm going to do this. And this is the mode I'm going to get in.
This is also an incredible strategy for sales people.
Yeah.
Is positioning yourself in a certain way, a certain environment, a certain relaxed state to invoke a more confident sales call.
Yeah. So for Teresa said, she says, for me, my brain starts telling me everything that could go wrong, or what feels like
justifiable
excuses. Yeah. And so that's fear, or that's the unknown. Right? Which is maybe lack of communication or understanding, which then can cause some fear or misunderstanding. Go ahead.
And it's also understanding yourself in terms of tolerable risk. Is, have you opened up to yourself about how much risk you're willing to tolerate, so that when these thoughts come rushing in, you already have a predefined idea on what's acceptable to a certain point, so that you can execute with intention.
Or how much can you execute on?
Yeah.
So like when I'm already like risk, I dove in and I took the risk, I'm just like, bring it on. Let's go. Like, come on. I'm already pissy. Let's just go ahead and do all of it. Like, rip off the Band-Aid.
And you've already identified your threshold of risk. But without identifying that, there's this middle ground of not sure what's right, what's wrong. I fell into that same trap of everything. My father, I grew up in a risk-averse environment. He taught me about credit. He taught me about this and that. He taught me to be careful about changing your password every 3 months to make sure that we don't have people trying to hack into the database and, you know, destroy your reputation. A risk-averse environment is where I grew up in. So I had this insecurity, this fear of things going wrong, but I had to understand in terms of tolerable risk, where did I sit? Where was my breakpoint in terms of accepting risk and letting it brush off or happen for me to continue to execute? This is something that I've learned in the last, I would say, 3 years, to be honest. But it's a practice of identifying tolerable risk, where you sit, so that you can then have a clear mind and execute with intention.
So I think one great exercise you could do to figure out what is the risk that's going to happen, so that I know how much can I tolerate, is to say, let's just say that he needed to work on a project for marketing, but he was kind of putting it off, making excuses because procrastinating, right? And you could say, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? What's the worst thing that could happen? Sorry. What's the worst thing that could happen if I do X, Y, and Z? What's the worst thing that could happen if I run this new campaign? Okay. The worst thing that could happen is I lose $1,800. That's an exact example of me trying to do something. This was like 4 or 5 years ago. I lose $1,800 because I don't know what I'm doing. If that's maybe the worst thing that could happen, what's the best thing that could happen? Okay. We get a few new customers, the phones start ringing, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Am I okay with losing the $1,800? Cause that's the budget I set. Okay. I am like, let's try it. And so that's asking yourself, what's the worst thing that could happen will help you measure the amount of risk that would come from the project that you're procrastinating on.
And this practice will help you create a tangible thing to an intangible thought.
Yes. So again, living in full transparency, knowing what version of yourself that you need to show up as, right? Even my coach said there's version 2 of Libby, there's version 3, there's version 4. You have to know what version of leader you're showing up at for these things. Okay, so we had total transparency, the version of leader you need to be to show up at certain points in your business, to manage certain people. You can't manage all the people the same way. You can't. As an entrepreneur, we're too scary. We're too direct. We're too in your face. But also, there's still a way to do this with a level of transparency. And then our energy, where is your energy leaking from, right? Is it leaking? And what's it contributing to? Procrastination? Is it self-defeating? Is it anxiety? Is it negativity? And then there's a ton of things coming on. I was just recapping.
So when you finally hit that spot and could stay focused, what changed?
Everything. My health, my marriage, relationship with my children, our businesses, the relationship with our employees, everything changed. That is like when you hit that spot, that's the integrated lifestyle. That's what you're trying to achieve as an entrepreneur, right? Is that there's a whole like, there is no such thing as work-life balance. There is no such thing if you own a business. I'm just going to tell you that. Everyone who stands on a stage or tries to teach you about work-life balance.
Or the 4-hour work week.
Baloney. I call BS. Baloney. I'm friends with software owners, cleaning owners, like, you know, lawn care, home service, you name it.
Even people who are making nine figures.
It doesn't exist. But what does is to create a life that is so integrated between your business and your marriage and your personal life that you never want to retire. You never want to quit. And you hit that spot of like pure nirvana of like, I love my life. I love the business. All the employees are great. Like we're just happy. And so it's a great spot to kind of come in, and it creates total focus. Like, you're so focused on like the next thing you have to execute, and everything else, you're like, oh wow, that was just noise. Like, and then you develop this level of confidence that you're just like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. And I don't want to do this. And that, yes, I want to do that. And you're so sure. So it goes back to our framework. I wish I could share my screen right now. And so you create alignment, you create execution, right? You're so aligned in everything from life to business to marriage. You can execute with like so much precision. You know exactly what you want to do. You know how to communicate it, and you can execute with speed. And then the last thing was intention. Everything you do in life, from what you eat to a business decision, is done with so much intentionality that you don't second guess anything. And I just described my program. Yeah.
And so having all this, and Dawn, back to you, is what this ends up having, the what comes from it is that it is much easier to get back into a state of flow much faster with that pure intention and that execution, that pure execution. It's so much easier to get back into what people call the state of flow, Zen. What are the other words for that?
The flow.
The flow.
Like flow, like your momentum.
Momentum.
Flow.
So it takes some level of effort, some really defined box of situations or scenarios for you to get into flow.
So a great example would be like going to a conference. You get excited, but it's just momentum. It's not maybe drive.
Right. But what I'm saying is that having all this stuff in terms of clarity, alignment, transparency, all of that stuff makes it so much easier to get back into flow. And honestly, almost to the point to where you can recall it instantly and get into a state of flow. And this is, again, I don't mean to circle back to this, but certain people like Elon Musk, for example, can almost, you know, just by recalling it, is pull into a state of flow because there is pure execution, alignment, clarity around those things.
So for the people that might be struggling with like dipping down, and Chris could probably contest to this, I would have severe states of down and I would hide and I wouldn't do a live. I wouldn't. And my face pushes most of our brands, even the cleaning company. And I would get to this like, oh, if I stopped, I would lose flow and I would be down for like weeks and I'd hide. And you just probably saw videos or recordings of me. And certain things I would let them hurt my flow. But I still thought that like, okay, I know what I want to do. Like I have a vision or I have goals. And so goals are so superficial sometimes, or so just, oh, I put something on the piece of paper because I was supposed to fill it out. But like, what are you? Maybe the flow, or it's hard to get back in the flow, is because you haven't actually found what fills that bucket. Like what makes me excited? What, I mean, when I was talking, I got a little too excited because I was so super excited. And that's because I think when I would lose flow, I didn't really know what I was doing yet. Like I didn't, okay, yeah, we wanted to be $2 million. Great. But that doesn't drive you. That doesn't drive you.
Yeah.
It's just motivation, and it dies and it comes and it goes, and you got to find your way to get motivated, but drive never. And so again, the three mountains of the logo mean a lot to me because like it's, you get, you say, oh, I want to be a $1 million company, and it motivates you, which is temporary, right? And you get to the top of that mountain and you're there and you're just kind of like, meh, or, you know, you take a break hiking up to it because you're kind of tired or you're burnt out. And then the second you get to the top, finally, maybe it took you longer than most. Maybe you got there fast at the sacrifice of yourself or your family or your health. I got to the top of the third mountain and became a $1 million cleaning business owner at the sacrifice of my relationship and my health.
Yep.
I will be transparent in that. I blew so much money and made so many mistakes. I neglected myself that it wasn't worth the climb. But I learned so many lessons, so that was worth the climb, not the $1 million revenue mark. Then you kind of get up there and you're like, huh, yeah, well, I thought it was going to feel better. Nah. And then you look at this, oh, but maybe I want to be $2 million. That will make me feel better. That will drive me. Yay. Like, and you get up there and you're just kind of like, eh, well, the view's kind of pretty, but I'm still just kind of in a slump. I don't feel fulfilled. My country was coming out, my Oklahoma. I don't feel fulfilled. And then you're like, wait, I've gone through all these struggles. I've made all these mistakes. I've spent all this money on coaching. And for what? Like, what's the purpose? What is the reason? And I think sometimes we're scared to say it. We're scared to put it on paper. We're scared to admit it. We're scared to fail. We're scared to think, well, like, how could I own $100 million cleaning ecosystem? Who am I? I don't know anything. Especially when you're, you know, you have people in your industry that are intimidating you or not very nice. I have that in the software industry. But when you find that mountain, Dawn, the third mountain, whatever it is, it then creates drive in you to say, oh, we got to get this right in the cleaning company because I need this revenue or I need this time freedom so that I can get to my purpose. But most of us don't know what our purpose is. I've spent a ton of time working on like my purpose. And I think that it's not done, but I have a very good picture of what it looks like. And it could get bigger and it could evolve. But that makes me excited to get involved with Organize It again when I had left them out to dry for, oh my God, poor Organize It. I was the ugly stepchild for 2 years. I barely did anything in there because I was focused on creating Woot Recruit. But they survived, they grew, and they're doing great. We got knocked down with the hurricane, and I said, you know what? We're just going to focus on stability. I don't want to be $2 million again. Nah, we want to diversify. Let's go multiple locations. but because I've now found my purpose in life, I now am excited to go back and help with Organize It and mm-hmm. get involved when I had just said, oh, it runs by itself. But now I'm excited to go help in Woot Recruit too, because it's part of my bigger purpose. It's part of what I'm trying to achieve. And so anything now, when anyone needs something from me, it's the old Libby was be like, oh my God, like, why do I have to help them? They don't know the answer to this. The new Libby's like, oh, let's go. Like, what do you need? Like, let's go. It's on. Like, oh, let's go get you a training. Like, here's a document. Like, let's jump on a call. Coaching moment. Now I'm excited to help. When before, because I didn't really understand what or why we were doing this, I looked at it like a nuisance almost.
Yeah.
Or like an inconvenience. Like, don't you know the answer to this?
And so I felt the same way is now that you've really fixed your goals and have that next level of drive and purpose, is my goals actually fit inside of that as well, which is really...
I had to make... So here you go, business owners. If you're the lead, like you're the entrepreneur. So we have Dawn and Leonard. Who's the actual entrepreneur? To me, if you're both an entrepreneur, that's hard. I was married, my prior marriage, we were both entrepreneurs and we were like this all the time. Two people that move so fast with so many ideas, it's hard to manage. It can be done. Like you see the Hermoses, it can be done. But I also had to realize Chris's goal had to fit inside mine, not just my employees, Chris's, because he is one of my employees or one of our employees. and so that scared me as well, but I'm like, oh, like he wants to do this or that. I got to make sure it fits inside of mine.
Yeah. Talking about relationships and yeah, it's massive partners. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the entrepreneur doesn't have to be the one that owns the company. It's just my personal thought.
No.
So don't get yourself in that bucket of thinking that, if I own the company, I'm an entrepreneur or vice versa.
And the entrepreneur doesn't even have to be running the company. The entrepreneur doesn't have to be the CEO. The entrepreneur doesn't have to be the CEO. I mean, me and Paul were both entrepreneurs in Woot Recruit when we started. We took turns running the company and the other one of us went and sat in a seat that needed our help because that's what the company needed. It didn't matter who the owner was. And Paul's like, he ran it. And I said, great, I'll go over in marketing. And then when I went back up to run it, Paul's like, great, I'll go sit in finance and ops. So that has nothing to do with who runs the business. The actual entrepreneur has nothing to do with like, oh, but I'm the CEO or I'm the visionary. That doesn't matter.
Yeah. And I love Leonard's comment. He said, Chris, did you notice when we talk about my ideas, how I light up? I was like, yeah, definitely. I mean, fired up. And you know, I was like, this guy will not stop. But it's super cool because you can see all of that creativity just like oozing out of you. And that's, I think, what you're talking about is connecting with that state of flow and getting to it much quicker.
And Dawn said, you know, you're right. It doesn't drive you. It's definitely temporary. Like if it doesn't drive you, it's temporary.
Yeah. And I wanted to hit on this. The 1LD lifestyle program that you put together is the concepts of having alignment, clarity, intention, and a lifestyle that works with it is, I think, the center, the focus here is that locking in everything here, it makes it so that your energy can be transferred much faster, much more efficiently. And that creates that pure execution, that state of flow that we're talking about, where you can jump in it whenever you want. If everything here is locked in, you have that transfer of energy that you can do to execute on anything that you want at whatever pace, whatever speed you want.
Yeah. I will say that this new drive, like when you find that drive and you've kind of got it nailed in and you have it on paper for the, please, you have to put it on paper so that you see it all the time. It's on my screensaver on my phone. It's on my computer saver. Like I asked Chris if I could put a picture of a guy on my phone that wasn't him. But you're going to see my vision. It's on my phone. I see it every day. My vision's on my computer. The vivid vision for each company is over here on the coffee table or couch. It has to be like you're eating it, you're sleeping it, you're breathing it. Like when you go to college or you're a professional athlete, it's all you do and you think about and you're so excited about it that you're never tired. It's ingrained in you because you've created the integrated life.
Yes.
So we've been on forever. We need to stop.
Yaya's been very, very patient.
Yaya's patient. She's over here walking around. But these are the things that I love to talk about. Saturday's become like my favorite day because, you know, I'm very tactics based. I'm very systems based. You need tactics. You need systems, right? You have to have these in a business or there is no scale. There's no such thing. But at the same time, you have to really learn self-mastery. You have to figure out who you are and what you want. And that comes with vision and mission so that you can then take that and communicate it. It's so hard to communicate to our employees, to our spouses, to our children, because we don't even know our own vision and mission. So how do we clearly communicate it to somebody else? It's impossible. But by doing this, you still need to be tactical and have processes and structure because you need that business to run so that you can focus on the vision and the mission and not in the day-to-day, not in the day-to-day, because the day-to-day will burn a visionary out. A day-to-day will burn an entrepreneur out faster than anything else. Like we can handle complaints. We can handle issues. I lost 150 Google reviews last week. And did I get stressed out, Chris? I'm like, nah, whatever.
Huh, that's interesting.
But day to day, burn me out. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't want to do day to day. And it's because we stay in there too long. And that's where we need tactics, systems at scale. And then we need to know how to communicate that vision of what we're doing to our employees for total clarity and total transparency. Finding that Zen state of total clarity and total transparency.
And if I can get a piece of that for my personal life and kids,
and then we want to teach our kids, and I'm trying to teach Chris that as he comes with me, because I know a lot of you guys work with your spouses. Here's the one thing that's going to happen. It's never going to happen at the same time. It's never going to happen at the same time. If you're the entrepreneur, you have to go work on yourself. You have to figure this out. This is the work that nobody wants to do because it's scary. It's just like, oh, like we just keep pushing it off. It's scary. And you have to lead by example. You have to be that figure that then your children see or your spouse sees or your partner sees, and to keep kind of that going. So love this. Super excited. If you guys are interested in the program that I built and launched, and Chris will be helping me in here because we're allowing partners, spouses, or business partners, we're allowing up to 4 people from your company to come in. But I asked Chris, I said, Chris, I want you to help me because as the entrepreneur, I don't know how to communicate from a spouse's perspective or from a business partner's perspective. I don't know. And I need that person to come in and give a different perspective of just an entrepreneur coaching and coaching and coaching and coaching. There's not going to be any relevance, and that's going to do nothing for you. One of the greatest people who taught me this was Dan. Mm-hmm. Was like, you're great and all, but the way you communicate does not transfer to the spouse or to the business or to the employees or to your executive assistant. And so I wanted his help. And then I also wanted his technical help because I'm like, hey, I want to teach pixels.
Yep.
So like strategic things like behind me are all the recruiting, not the recruiting, I'm sorry, the marketing pixels for the company and how the pixels all overchange to like bring down our marketing costs. But I'm like, oh my God, I need help with pixels because Chris being a CTO, I'm like, oh, can you also come in and help us with marketing pixels, Chris?
Yeah.
So I'm super excited. And
as you were talking, yeah. I was fired up. You can't see it now, but I had goosebumps because this is something that is so passionate to me as well, is how can you lock in what I think is the most important part in my life, which is the people I care about, and being able to lock it in to the point to where you have life work balance, you have the lifestyle, you have everything. And so I'm super excited to start sharing more and talking about strategic relationships and tactics.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, guys, none of this is going to happen on accident. None of it. You're not going to just be like, oh my God, I know my vision. Like, it's not. Or, oh my God, I have a great marriage. Or like, oh my God, my kids are doing amazing. None of it happens on accident. It all happens with a lot of work that we put in on ourselves first. And then that transfers to our employees, that transfers to our spouses or our business partners, that transfers to everything you do and into your vision. And so, and again, we practice total transparency on here, which why we're so excited, nothing to hide, but everything to give. Hiring sucks, right? Sorting through bad applications, ghosted interviews, and wasted time. It's all exhausting. That's why we built WooRecruit, the hiring system designed to attract and convert the right people for your business fast. What are some of the benefits? Well, you get more qualified applicants without lifting a single finger. Increase your show rate, eliminate the worry of ghosting. Track every single step of our process with real-time data. If you're tired of hiring headache, go to WooRecruit.com and let us start filling your open roles today.